Our second case this morning is United States against Campbell. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Dylan Ambrose, counsel for the appellant in this case, Senior Chief Patrick Campbell, United States Navy. Judge Efron, with your permission, I'd like to request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. The central issue in this case concerns the constitutionality and the reasonableness of charging appellant for possession of the same 38 images in three different specifications. The initial question to ask is the appropriate unit of prosecution under 18 U.S.C.
Wait, isn't the appropriate question to ask whether or not that has been waived?
That is certainly a threshold question about whether the facial duplicative test was met. Appellant argues that it has been met in this case, and the lower court erred in finding that it was not accepted or not filed.
How can you argue that these are facially duplicative when the language in the specifications is different? I mean, isn't there some impact as to the word facially duplicative?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the things noted by the lower court in determining it wasn't facially duplicative, I don't think are telling on whether or not you look at the full cases or the full specifications and the case in full and determine whether or not they're facially duplicative.
Well, I'm glad you just decided within the last year or so, didn't we say that facially duplicative meant factually the same?
Yes, I'm glad you did, ma'am. I believe, yes, we did determine it's factually the same, and I believe these are factually the same. I would note that specification 3, because it is clause 1 and 2 crime, is somewhat different, but it's fully included within specification 1 and 2, and the charges are there.
But the location of the media, of the images, is on three different media, and that, in and of itself, means that there is a different fact program, a factual situation here.
Well, that is the central question about what is the proper unit of prosecution.
No, those are two different issues.
Well, I believe it's somewhat circular in the sense that we have to determine, in order to get through the facially duplicative, if these multiple media, it doesn't matter what media device it's on, if that's a singular crime.
Well, that would be true if an objection had been made at trial on either of these grounds, but now we're here. And no objection was made at trial, and there was an unconditional guilty plea.
That's correct.
So it's not the same thing at all.
Well, appellant argues that it doesn't matter what type of media device it's on because of the fact that any media device means all media devices.
No, doesn't the statute say, doesn't 2252 go into a long list of media places? You know, it doesn't just say obscene images. It doesn't just say images of child pornography. It talks about books, films. Isn't the clear intent of Congress to prohibit possession on any medium? And they go through a long laundry list of media. Aren't those each different under Blockburger?
With regard to the facially duplicative analysis, no, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I think what they are listing the types of media. However, it's saying that any type of media, whether it be books, the central term there is any, which kind of moves us back into the initial argument about whether or not the unit of prosecution. And Appellant argues that this is an ambiguous statute because of that word any.
This isn't what?
Is an ambiguous statute because of that word any. Any has, when we're talking about units of prosecution, any has had problems in a number of cases, the Cuero and Polizzi cases, even state. Any has typically been found ambiguous in connection with the allowable unit of prosecution. And that's because a one sum or all is a problem when we're trying to determine a proper unit of prosecution. Is it one or is it all of them?
Counsel, do you agree that if we believe that this issue has been waived, that we don't reach the unit of prosecution question?
We don't reach the multiplicious issue. However, I think the analysis under an unreasonable multiplication of charges is similar because that Quiros factor 2 and 3, and the lower court's analysis essentially did a multiplicity analysis. And we need to address this because lower courts are going to believe at this point, or trial courts are going to believe at this point, that it's all right to charge multiple possessions because of a published case, United States versus Campbell, this case at the lower court. So whether it's under an unreasonable multiplication of charges and those second and third Quiros factors, or it's under a multiplicity analysis, I think the analysis still needs to be done under either one of those.
to resolve this case if we think that the issues have been waived?
With regard to the multiplicity, yes, but not with regard to an unreasonable multiplication of charges.
Didn't we just say in Gladjoe that the test is essentially the same?
The test is essentially the same when it comes to multiplicity for sentencing purposes. However, the lower court, in internal inconsistency, they certainly did find that there was facially duplicative because of the fact that they did find, the lower court did find, that by consolidating the three charges in charge two, they found, must have found that it was facially duplicative in that situation. However, the unreasonable multiplication of charges test, that first clearest factor determines whether, that's one of the factors to consider, is whether this was objected to at trial. It's not determinative. It's one of the things we do look at. I believe the Joyce case says, United States versus Joyce, 50 MJ at 569, see, this is not a necessary impediment that it's not objected to in a trial. So whether this court analyzes through multiplicity or an unreasonable multiplication
Did you ask us to grant on unreasonable multiplication, and did we grant on it?
Your Honor, I think the
answer is no and no.
I argued that the lower court erred. And I believe I did put an alternate source of the problem was the whether it's an unreasonable multiplication of charges issue.
This sounds like a multiplicity argument to me, and it sounds like it's waived.
If it is waived, then we would request that this court look at it as an unreasonable multiplication of charges issue, because I believe Quiros Factor 2 and 3 do the same analysis. The lower court as much said that.
Okay, if you got an unreasonable multiplication of charges, just granting that for the purpose of argument, where's the prejudice? This is special. He got a BCD in 4 months.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Where's the prejudice?
This is the fact that he only got 4 months of the BCD shows that the military judge considered his record and the fact that he had 15 and a half years of good service. He had he was a senior chief in the Navy with good marks.
So the trial judge did everything right. Where's the prejudice?
The judge did not do everything right because these charges, these two extra possession charges, were considered by the military judge. So, in the absence of that, the military judge gave a fairly light sentence. However, if those two possession charges were not considered by the military judge,
he would have given an even lighter sentence?
Yes, Your Honor. We'd assume that if she's going to consider those two charges, she's going to give a greater sentence. Therefore, he could have gotten a greater sentence and potentially could have stayed in the Navy. With regard to the ambiguity of this statute, as we noted, any can mean one, some, or all. And because it can mean one, that would be bad for the defense. The government would win in that situation. However, if we can interpret to mean all, that would be good for the defense, and he would win the day because of the fact that that would be all possessions. All possessions would mean those three possessions for which he pled guilty, which he was convicted, would be a single prosecution and a single charge.
So is it your view that no matter how many different items a person possesses in no matter how many different places, that they can only be charged with one?
I would say it's ambiguous as to what we can determine from 18 U.S.C. 2252 alpha, but that is a potential theory that, yes, that it would be one charge, one single charge for any possession.
So if you have a warehouse that's got 10,000 of the same images, 5,000 of them on computer disks, 2,500 of them on paper, and 2,500 of them in framed photos. It's one?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. And initially, I would agree that sounds logical, but there are absurd results the other way as well. We have a person with five discs that contain one image of child pornography, and then we have a person that had one image or one media that contains the same five images. That person potentially could get 10 years.
Didn't this statute once say three or more images, and Congress amended it to wipe that out? What's that say about congressional intent?
A lot, Your Honor. And I think we need to analyze 18 U.S.C. 2252, which is that statute, and in the analog to 18 U.S.C. 2252 alpha. The fact that they had three or more indicates it was a crime to own three in that statute. It would be a single crime to own three or more. So four or five, whatever, it would be a single crime. The Polizzi case analyzes, so does Kimbrough. They do a determination that language by itself shows that multiple prosecutions were not considered applicable for that crime, 18 or that statute, 18 U.S.C. 2252. The fact that they changed it to one or more just closed the loophole because of the fact that someone could own one or two and not be prosecuted, one or two discs or books that contain child pornography. That barely closed the loophole. That they did keep the same
language. It was not Congress's intent to broaden the coverage of the statute.
Broaden the amount of people who could be brought on charges with this. To close that loophole where one or two books owned by a person, they'd be a criminal as well. Not necessarily to state that more than one. In fact, 18 U.S.C. 2252 has also kept an affirmative defense where if you own less than three images or less than three matters containing child pornography, so if you own two, assuming that the other that you meet the other elements of that affirmative defense, you cannot be convicted. So a person who owns two would be liable for only one offense in that situation.
Just to be clear, if you owned a book, magazine, periodical, film, and videotape, and you had the same image of child pornography in each, you'd say that's one offense.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it's a legitimate argument that it could be ambiguous. When we look at 18 U.S.C. 2252, I think that's...
So you have a book, magazine, periodical, etc., and it has different pornography in it. You're still arguing that's one offense?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's an argument that can be made. However...
it doesn't have to be the same image?
It wouldn't have to be the same image under that theory, yes.
Okay, so the theory is that you just lump it all together.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Possession is a continuing course of conduct crime.
Well, counsel, you rely very heavily on the Supreme Court's decision in Bell versus the United States in your brief, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you think that if in the facts of that case, we'll change the facts slightly so that the woman is taken from Texas to Pennsylvania, then from Pennsylvania to Illinois, and then from Illinois to Virginia. Do you think that the case would still come out the same?
No, Your Honor.
And how is that different? Why not?
Because Bell versus the United States talked about a transactional crime, the crossing of the state border. It was the ambiguous part was any women or any, women or girls. Therefore, they were able to determine what the actual crime was. It's the crossing of the border. In this case, we have a continual course of conduct crime. We have possession.
But on different mediums.
On different mediums, yes. And that's the question about where the ambiguity lies. Any media could mean all media in this situation. It's not clear. Just like any women could be, it would be applied for two women over or three women over under the Mann Act. However, disregarding those arguments, we have a circuit court case. We have a Fifth Circuit case, Plank, on which the lower court relied. And under that test, Plank, the Fifth Circuit, grafted on a transactional element to possession, whereby, as I quote, as long as the meat actually allowed multiple charges for multiple possessions, as long as the prohibited images were obtained through the result of different transactions. So in that situation, Judge Baker, where we have different images on different books, media, and whatnot, if we receive them from different places, that would be a problem. Under Plank, that would still be criminal. In this situation, this situation we have in Campbell is distinguishable from Plank because of the fact that we only have one transaction. We have him downloading these 38 images from the computer.
Why isn't that one transaction?
What's that?
Why isn't that one transaction? And then when he puts them on the disks. Well, downloading them is one transaction. Putting them on the disks is another transaction. And taking to his home computer and transferring them to the computer, why isn't that another transaction?
Appellant believes that the transaction is something that occurs between two people, one person and another. It would have to be, or if we even argue that it was a criminal transaction, the receipt of those possession would be a crime. The reproduction of those images is not a crime under 18 U.S.C. 2252. It would be a crime, and Congress has made it a crime, if you did so with the intent to distribute those. But that was not the case here. All he did was download and copy those images onto disk to take them home, and he uploaded them on his home computer. Appellant argues that those are not transactions. Those are merely him taking the images and placing them on a different media device. In Plank,
could he put them on a billboard? That's a medium.
Yes, Your Honor, I think there would be other...
There'd be other questions, but...
Well, that, I mean, Your Honor, that's a good question because the fact that it goes to the problem here is that would be another crime. Possession is a crime. This ignores the fact that there are other crimes within 18 U.S.C. 2252 Alpha. There are crimes that are transactions. There's distribution, there's receipt, there's advertising, so on the billboard, there's other transactional crimes. Therefore, a transactional element need not be placed on possession in order to fulfill Congress's intent to get rid of the, or the, eliminate the metastasizing of child pornography in the world.
Well, if there's no need for a transactional part of it, then where does that leave you?
If it leaves me with the fact that a possession is a possession. If you have 100 images, or if you have 100 media, or if you have one media, that's a single crime that you can get 10 years for. Now, the building of that warehouse, the receipt, the building of other warehouses, the distribution, those are separate crimes that receive different punishments.
Counsel,
20 years for each one of those.
I just want to make sure I understand your argument. Your argument is that if an individual has a magazine with child pornography in it and it's in his car, and he has images, completely different images of child pornography on his computer, that's one charge.
That would be under possession, yes. Allow me to step back and say the lower court analyzes according to Plank. And Plank would make that a crime if it was the result of different transactions. Under Plank, that would be a crime. But in our situation, that this is not a crime.
And remind me again what your response to Judge Efron was why isn't it a different transaction? Oh, because there's no second party. The uploading, downloading, uploading, downloading, uploading, downloading.
That's correct, Your Honor. Appellant requests, because the lower court misread the record and failed to adequately perform the appellant's Article 66 review, remand is necessary in this case at the very least. However, appellant requests this court, because of this failure, coupled to the fact that the military judge should have considered, Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time.
You can finish your presentation now, and then you'll have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Must be considered in sentencing. Appellant requests this court for a sentence rehearing.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge, and may it please the court. The appellant waived, and I use that term in the sense, in its legal sense, waived with his unconditional guilty pleas the right to review for multiplicity. The only analysis that this court should engage in, an appellate court should engage in, when the appellant waives the multiplicity issue is facially duplicative. And as pointed out by this court during the appellant's argument, that is a factual analysis of the record. This court just determines whether or not the factual components of the crime are the same. If they are not...
Now, appellant's trying to come in the back door, depending on how you look at it, through the multiplication of charges argument, because this court has said that's not necessarily waived. It weighs, but not waives, into the analysis of multiplication of charges. Is it your position that the appellant has waived the multiplication of charges issue? And or you can also answer that by saying, has he raised it?
Let me go with the latter first, sir.
He has not raised it.
I want to hear your response to both, though, because I know...
Yes, sir.
This isn't my first oral argument, but, you know.
Yes, sir. I think, I know it hasn't been raised, but to answer your first part of your question directly, he has not waived, and even if he did, the lower court did look at the waiver of the unreasonable multiplication of charges and say, for their purposes, they said he didn't, and they analyzed the unreasonable multiplication of charges. So the court...
Would you agree or not that if multiplication of charges is on the table, if it's on the table, we need to address the question that the appellant has raised in issue two?
No, sir, because I believe that under unreasonable multiplication of charges, even though it's very different than multiplicity, the second prong of Quiznos, which is, or Quiros, which is is whether or not the charges are multiplicious. So I don't think it was either Congress's intent or the President's intent when doing the unreasonable multiplication of charges isn't allowing someone to backdoor a multiplicity analysis. So the government's position that you apply the same test to the waiver, he just gets the rest of the Quiros factors, was it government origin? Because what the principal argument and the principal reason why we have an unreasonable multiplication of charges is to prevent government overreaching. There's nothing wrong with charging all these offenses. It's just to prevent the prosecutor, given the nature of our practice, from overreaching.
But in theory, you'd be overreaching if you waived multiplicity, but nonetheless, you were being charged three times for one act. Arguably, that's overreaching.
Well,
but that may not be this case, but...
Right. That may be so, but the multiplicity analysis protects a different right than the unreasonable multiplication analysis. One is constitutional based upon the double jeopardy clause, and one is a matter of policy. And it really, although this court said it's not a matter of fundamental fairness, it's a matter of reasonableness, it is one where the court gets to import some subjective analysis into how the government charged in a particular case and infuse some reasonableness or fairness into the process. And that's because, as we know, we have to charge all known crimes, not applicable in the federal court, but we have to charge all known crimes. So it's a governor, if you will, on the prosecutorial discretion in the military.
What do you think is the weakest link, in your view, in the appellant's analysis as to transactions and possession?
You wish me to go into the multiplicity analysis? Jump over the waiver?
I just want to, on the theory that people argue in the alternative sometimes before this court.
Yes, sir.
Is it the fact that he engaged in used three different media or materials to store the stuff? Is it the fact that he uploaded it, downloaded it? But let's say you were addressing the question, what would a court or should a court do in terms of defining the law for the future and not just for the present?
Well, doing a multiplicity analysis, we first look to the intent of Congress as expressed in the statute.
I'm trying to get you away from that and speak to, put that aside for a moment. Let's talk about Plank or something else. And is the key ingredient in possession, and it may be all of the above, but is the key ingredient in a case like this the fact that he had three different materials that had pornography on them, or was it the fact that he was in three different places when he did it, or is it the fact that he uploaded and downloaded and uploaded and downloaded? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. It is the first. It is that he had possession of media, whether they were six CDs or 10 CDs or a CD and a hard drive or a book, a CD, a hard drive, and a film, the government could proceed under the plain language of the statute to charge each and every one. In fact, the government...
What happens if he has six disks and he downloads all six at the same time? Is that six or one? Flat question.
I think it would be six. And in fact, in United States versus Ansel, we submitted supplemental authority the other day. In that case, the accused had 38 CDs and one hard drive, and he was charged with 38 separate counts of violation of 2252 alpha, the B section rather than A section.
Were they the same images in that case?
I don't believe it was clear from the case. I don't recall. Sir.
How important is that to our analysis here? In Plank, they were different images. Here they are identical images.
The language in the statute doesn't say possess a book all with different images. It says possess a book, film, periodical that contain an image of child pornography. It doesn't distinguish, the plain language of the statute doesn't distinguish between different pictures. So it could be 10 CDs with one picture on it, and we get 10 specs.
If it doesn't matter, why do you suppose that in charge two that the specifications are careful to parse out specific files in each different specification, different ones? So for example, in specification one, it says including 24803531.jpg, and then when you go to specification two, it includes a different one. And when you go to specification three, if there's yet still another one.
Yes, Your Honor. If that's surplusage, they could have just referred to around 38 images of child pornography. They didn't have to specify a JPEG file or a JPEG picture. It was just a matter of charging. I think that was just a choice that the government made at the time.
How do you respond to the appellant's argument that if we were to look at this from the transactional perspective, that these actions do not constitute separate transactions?
In a multiplicity analysis, one of the things the court must do is determine if we're charging someone with multiple crimes for an act that violates the same statute as, for instance, here in specifications 1 and 2, they do look to this unit of prosecution. The courts have been rather fuzzy upon what that means, and what they're looking at did Congress intend a discrete, separate act, or was it a continuing course of conduct? I think in Blockberger, the court used uno dictus to say, was it a separate and complete act? Here, it's not necessary. The transaction is, I possess the image, and here I copy it. Even if I put it on a copy machine, that's another possession. So if we go both to the statute itself and the intent of Congress, and we look at the intent of Congress, that was to prevent the metastasization of child pornography and to provide an incentive for people that possess this stuff to get rid of it, not to copy it.
So your position is that a person can have a transaction with themselves, and the appellant's position is that you have to have something else out there to have a transaction.
To incorporate to adopt the appellant's position would allow someone to take a CD full of child pornography and reproduce it 1,000 times and then come in and argue, look, it's all just one possession.
No, that is their argument.
I don't mean to be disrespectful. It's contrary to the congressional intent. The congressional intent clearly states we're trying to prevent this. Every copy re-victimizes the victim. Every copy re-sexualizes the victim. Their findings are replete. We're trying to get rid of it, not to copy it. It's clear both from the statute and congressional intent that they did not want the proliferation of child pornography. I don't know how you would read it any other way.
Well, does the word transaction appear in the statute?
And it does not. I think that the only time transaction would come into play is when you're doing a multiplicity analysis and you're trying to determine, is it a specific act type of crime or is it a continuing course of conduct type of crime? That's the only way I can see that a transaction would come into play. Is it a discrete act crime, or is it a continuing course of crime?
If we were to get to this issue, if we get by the waiver issue, would you like this court to adopt the Plank rationale?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you deal then with the affirmative defense of possession of less than three images?
It's less than three images, not less than three separate media. So if I had a CD that had, let's say, adult porn on it, but happened to have two images of child porn, that would be my defense.
Is there any discussion in legislative history regarding the connection between that affirmative defense and that knowingly element?
No, I don't recall off the top of my head. I believe that part of it was the Congress was concerned that someone who downloads a whole bunch of protected pornography and this stuff was mixed in it, that they weren't caught up in this net. When they downloaded it thinking it was all adult porn, protected matter, and then they happened to come across a child, or they thought the child that they're looking at was really, what they thought was an adult was really a child. That was the protective out that Congress intended with the affirmative defense.
Basically, it's your position that if we have an image, an electronic image, that is identical, and it's on two different media, it's two different images.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, sir. In conclusion, if there are no further questions, I would invite this court to adopt its rationale that it had in United States versus Gladue and United States versus Lloyd, which said that on a unconditional guilty plea, the appellant waives any of multiplicity analysis except for facial duplicativeness, which merely means that the appellate court gets to review the whole record of trial in order to determine whether the predicate, the factual predicates are the same for both cases, but does not engage in a full-blown multiplicity analysis. If there are no further questions, that concludes the government's case.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Just 2 points of clarity. When we're defining transaction, we should use the definition, or we should look to the context of where we get that transactional test. We should look to Plank. And in Plank, we had a situation where we had three different media devices that had differing images and differing amounts of images, which clearly indicated that the transactions came from different places. With that definition, appellant wishes to ascribe that to his case, and in this situation, he got the same 38 images from one place, and then we had the same 38 images on another disk that he downloaded, and then just another on another disk or his home computer.
Just to be clear, was the Plank court saying that separate transactions was a contextual factor to their analysis, or were they saying the test is transaction? You see the difference?
No.
One is a black letter test, and the other is, as in Fourth Amendment law, identifying those aspects of the case that lead it to one result versus another.
Was
the Plank court saying in all cases, transaction?
Yes, sir. I think it was because of the fact of the language within it that said, as long as prohibited images were obtained through the result of transactions, it's criminal. It's allowed to.
And therefore, if not, it isn't.
That's correct.
That's how you read that.
That's how I read that, yes, Your Honor. And second, with regard to the affirmative defense, appellant was referring to 18 U.S.C. 2252 as the analog of 2252 alpha in talking about whether or not, talking about three matters. Appellant recognizes and does say three images in 18 U.S.C. 2252 alpha, which is the statute we're under here. However, appellant thinks 18 U.S.C. 2252 is helpful in analyzing, as the government has stated in its brief, to look at it, to analyze it, and see the congressional intent behind it. No further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation. The case is submitted. The court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise.